This is HPR episode 2121 entitled Dark Cult's Tabletop Game. It is hosted by Klaatu and is about 30 minutes long. The summary is Klaatu discusses the EOL tabletop game Dark Cults.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by anhonesthost.com. Get 15% discount on all shared hosting with the offer code HPR15. That's HPR15. Better web hosting that's honest and fair at anhonesthost.com.
You're listening to Hacker Public Radio. My name is Klaatu. Today we're going to talk about some tabletop gaming. I've been getting into tabletop gaming lately because it's, because video games started coming to Linux, I feel like that's a passe subject now. It's like, oh, video games, yeah, we've got those now. So now I'm really kind of fascinated by this whole thing about analog games, things that don't require electricity, things that concentrate necessarily on the gaming mechanic rather than the glitz and glamour of the latest graphics card. So yeah, I've been getting into it lately, and one of them that I want just to talk about is called Dark Cults. So a long time ago, like way long time ago, back in 1983, there was a little card game called Dark Cults, and it was released by an independent game publisher, and I guess it was successful enough to warrant an extension pack that came out 2 years later, but mostly today it's an obscure product of the 80s with a slight legacy that it managed to leave behind. And it's from that legacy that I actually discovered it in the first place, because I was researching games intended for specifically two players, because that's what I have access to. Two players. And I kept coming across this one game called Gloom, G-L-O-O-M, which I felt, yeah, that sounds pretty good, Gloom. That sounds about my speed. And the Gloom game, which I should talk about sometime, maybe in a later episode, Gloom very often got referenced in relation to this older game called Dark Cults. And so I was really getting curious about what this Dark Cults game was, because it sounded intriguing, and apparently it had made an impact on someone, because it keeps getting referenced here with Gloom. So I did some research, and ended up digging up some information about it. Now, I don't know what your childhood was like, but mine was filled with, well, imagination. I wasn't really encouraged to watch a whole lot of TV, so a lot of what I did as a kid was make up my own stories using pretty much anything I could get my hands on. You know, didn't really care if it was Lego sets or cardboard cutouts, doesn't really matter. I could imagine myself into a story with pretty much anything, and they weren't necessarily good stories, you know, like good, quote-unquote good, but at the same time, they were, like, utterly engrossing to me, so I mean, good enough, right? And I found out later in life that that's kind of what makes a story good, is that as long as it interests me, then I'll call it good, or if it interests you, you'll call it good. So I kind of got sort of trained early on to that it was okay to make up stories. In my third year in primary school, I think it was, my teacher had this box of story starters, which she would use pretty much as busy work. But I loved them. Like I would do my work just so I could get to the busy work at the end of the class. And she would give you a story starter card, and then you would have to write out a story, you know, from that prompt. And there were other game-like prompts that I discovered later, you know, at the local bookstore as a kid. And then I sort of rediscovered at some point later on as an adult RPG gaming, and fell in love with the once forbidden pastime that I'd I'd flirted with as a sixth grader, but my parents generally did not let me get anywhere near Dungeons and Dragons. And for whatever reason, I was obedient. I'm not sure what that was all about, but I kind of I was around that kind of gaming as a kid, and story starters and things that required a lot of imagination. I never really got to experience it a whole lot as a proper game, but I was kind of all around that area. So when I came across Dark Cults, really, really caught my attention, because it actually it was it's kind of a combination, a perfect combination of those past experiences. So RPG-like game, not super RPG. It has the obligatory dark theme that I tend to gravitate towards, and it's strongly reliant upon imagination, and it's designed conveniently anywhere from 1 to 4 players, actually maybe 1 to 5. Originally, it was designed specifically for 2 players, like exactly 2 players. But in the 1985 expansion pack, it provided a single player and either 4 or 5 on the max. I think 4, but they're like, you could probably fake it with 5. So it's like this perfect game for me. I'm just like, oh, this is perfect. The only problem was Dark Cults has been out of print for about, geez, now 30, 20, 20, 30 years. So not convenient. So I really wanted to play Dark Cults, and I'll talk about exactly what Dark Cult is in a moment, but I really wanted to play it, and luckily I found a few other people online who wanted to play the game as well. A few of them had this idea of recreating the entire game with new art, specifically Edward Gorey version of the cards. So instead of the original illustrations, just use Edward Gorey illustrations and come up with this new deck. And it's around that time that I kind of started to realize that there was this thing called print and play. And a print and play game is a game that someone posts, like PDFs of their card designs online. You download them, you print them, and then you play them. It's like this whole revolution in analog gaming, It's like you don't, there is no printer. You're the printer. There is no distributor. You are the distributor. Amazing, amazing, amazing. Really, really, really exciting. Problem, of course, here is again that we don't have rights to Edward Gorey's art, and no one, again, the card game Dark Cult itself has not been released as a print and play. It's out of print. No one remembers it. So, I found a bunch of resources online of some guy who had owned Dark Cults and had managed to scan every single card and all the rules in to his computer, and he posted all this stuff online. So it is out there. Like you can see it. You can experience it digitally. The problem is that the scans aren't terribly good. They're not very high res. I think most of them are on color cards. So you would, if you tried to print that directly, you would be printing a lot of color, like just the color background. Maybe that was just the rule book. I could be misremembering parts of this, but either way, it just wasn't a super convenient, great sort of way to get a hold of this game. But all of these ideas started sort of coming together in my head, and I thought, well, why don't I just use Creative Commons clip art and make a deck that would be print and play and post that online, and then I can play it. So I went to open source, openclipart.org, which is a place where I sometimes post things and use clip art from a lot. It's CC0, so there's no attribution, no restrictions whatsoever. It is basically public domain, but with the Creative Commons explicit, license, like, hey, there are no requirements here. You can just use this art for yourself. And there are a couple of guys over, or I should say contributors, I don't know if they're guys, but there are a couple of contributors over at openclipart.org who do a lot of scanning of vintage illustrations, and then they vectorize them and post them on openclipart.org. So there's this whole sort of sub-collection of vintage artwork from various sources. I mean, there's some like comic book type styles, there are some I guess probably kids books, you know, just fiction books, mystery books, so all kinds of interesting vintage clip art on this site. So I sat down with a list. I went to the one place online that did actually have a complete deck of Dark Cults, transcribed all the rules, the rule book, and I made a list of all the cards that were included in the deck, and I just sat down and recreated them using clip art from openclipart.org. I did all that in Inkscape, of course, and just winged it, really. Just went crazy for a couple of days and banged out a complete deck of essentially Dark Cults. You can find this deck at gitlab.com/notclatu/darkoccult. That is Dark Occult, so that's to differentiate it from Dark Cults. So DarkOccult. gitlab.com/notclatu/darkoccult. Okay, so that's how you can play this game. That's what that was all about. Now let's talk a little bit about the game itself and why it's so amazing. So the gameplay is, you can imagine an RPG without a DM or GM, whatever the dungeon master, the game master, whatever you call that person. So you can imagine it sort of as an RPG without the structure, really. That's the general feel of it anyway. You don't have any dice. Like I say, it's totally unstructured. So that's different, but the feel itself is similar. It's got a similar sort of, it satisfies the same urge, if you will. So the rules in a nutshell are that you play life, and your opponent, if you're playing the two-player or whatever, your opponent is playing death. Now your job is to keep the protagonist of the story alive as he or she goes on an ill-advised stroll in the middle of the night. Most everything outside of this character's apartment is pretty much trying to kill him, so the odds aren't necessarily good. The role of your opponent, who's playing death, their job is to try to kill to kill the protagonist. So the actual gameplay goes something like this. The story begins with a start card, at which point the protagonist decides to go out for a midnight stroll. That's always the story starter. As new cards are drawn, you play them in the middle of the table. You line up the cards into a storyline, essentially. And as the protagonist goes through the different encounters that each card represents, and these encounters can be innocuous, they can be just a new location, or they could be something that adds to the atmosphere, like ominous fog, or eerie sounds, or spooky symbols etched into the wall, or whatever. They could be unsettling, like a derelict drunkard, a sobbing woman, an overheard violent argument, or they can be outright dangerous, like an escaped lunatic, an evil apparition, or a witch, escaped convict, lots of different threats, direct threats. So as the cards are played, each player narrates that segment of the tale. So the story builds on itself as you play each card, and you narrate, you know, a segment of the story. So it's a bit of a, what do they call it, exotic corpse or something, or whatever that's called, where you kind of build on the thing that the previous person laid down. So you're building off of each other's story based on whatever the cards are kind of dictating. And at some point, because of the way that cards are drawn, at some point some outcome is forced, at which point either the protagonist dies, like they get attacked and they aren't able to escape, or the protagonist manages to escape, and then you start a new storyline where the protagonist goes out on the following night, which, I don't know, if my neighborhood was this dangerous, I would just not go outside at night. But this protagonist always goes out at night. So Each card type has different points for life or for death, or for both sometimes. So it is to your advantage, game, you know, in terms of game mechanic, it's to your advantage to draw the story out, to make it long, to lengthen it. But other times it might be better for you to go in for the kill if you're death, or retreat in utter fear if you're life, because after all, you don't want to, you know, if you're death, you want the protagonist to die, or if you're life, you don't want to die. So you do have to hedge your bets. You know, before you draw that next card, you have to kind of think, well, should I draw this card or should I run? Because I've just encountered, and each card, I should say, so the tricky thing about this is not just one deck that you're drawing from. So each card has a certain type of card that you're allowed to draw after it. So if you draw, death could not, for instance, draw or play two evil characters in a row, because if an evil character card is drawn, or is played, I should say, then it only allows an end card. And an end card is either an escape card, where the protagonist escapes, or death, where the death character, you know, the character dies. So similarly, a danger card demands either an end or a save. So that means that the protagonist basically loses his nerve and just goes back home, or it was all a dream, or however you want to spin it, really. So there's like this sort of ebb and flow imposed on the story based on which kind of card is being played and what is allowed to then be played after it. So, you know, the typical cards that you're playing are like the location and the atmosphere cards. Old crumbling cathedral, you know, so the protagonist is walking near an old crumbling cathedral and turns and notices a glimmer inside. She's, for some reason, drawn to go inside. And then after that location card, you have to draw, let's say, an atmosphere card. Or it may be like an atmosphere card and or a threat card. So, you know, you kind of have a choice. So if you're death and you can play a threat card, maybe you want to go ahead and play that, because that could introduce a danger coming up for the protagonist. So there are certain types of cards that you're allowed to play at certain times, and that's all dictated by the cards themselves. What that means, I guess, on a technical level, is that there's a perfect story arc built into each round of the game. Atmosphere is created. Paranoia is faced head-on. Everything's a potential threat. Every action is suspicious, possibly aggressive. Every sound is a harbinger, and every encounter is a brush with death. It's basically any given episode of Twilight Zone or Night Gallery or Tales from the Crypt. It's always going to go wrong. It's just a matter of when and how bad it will be. As I've said, there are single player and other mods. I've not played with any more than I've only played single player. So in 1985, an expansion pack was added, and it brought a couple of new cards, including a completely new card type, the object card. So it added some cards, and it also came out with so object cards are played after location cards. So you're in a location, or your character goes to a location, and if you have an object card, then you can play that so that they can find an object and start carrying that around with them. And then in addition to that, it came out with a new, you know, a couple of rule mods that you can play if you want to. So the single player mode, death is basically relegated to luck of the draw, although there are ways to mitigate that, notably with a save card. So again, you can push your luck, but if you start feeling too nervous and you feel like your character is going to get killed, you can chicken out still. So the deck in a single-player mode gets split into different categories, and the gameplay revolves around the main story deck, which sets up the atmosphere and the locations and objects, and a couple of just a small percentage of possible threats. The cards themselves dictate which deck to draw from next, because again, remember, the cards each tell you what you're allowed to play after that card has been played. which is why the main story deck has a few threat cards sprinkled into it, because that way you never go through a whole game without anything threatening ever happening. You know, it kind of forces that. The first time I played was with a short test printout that I'd done from my own deck. And I was bored, and I was waiting for like a car repair to be done. So I was in like the waiting lobby of a garage, and I happened to bring my little test deck along. And it was just, I mean, it wasn't even a full deck. I'm talking about like this was the test print. So it was like one A4 sheet of paper cut into, I think, 9 cards. So I dealt them out one by one, just kind of as story prompts, pretty much. And I started narrating in my head as I went along. And I have to say, I surprised myself at how atmospheric the experience was, you know, like how emotionally sort of caught up in the story I was getting as I followed this little, you know, this made up protagonist along his night stroll. So to keep myself from reinventing the same character over and over, I decided to give myself prompts for those as well. So I printed out some character build sheets from OpenD6, which if you look online for OpenD6 system, you should be able to find the OpenD6 books, which are, it's sort of this open game license RPG system based obviously around a D6, meaning six-sided die. So a lot of RPG systems kind of expect you to have like 21-sided die and stuff like that. So this is like very specific, like, oh, you will, you know, this RPG system will work with a D6. So look for that. It has really nothing to do with this, except that in one of their books, they had some printouts, or they had some character build starters. And so there are like 10, maybe 12 different characters. And so I just printed those sheets out kind of as prompts and made myself some cards with those characters on them. And that kind of gives you an idea of like, oh, here's a character that I'm going to play. And this is a bodyguard, so the character is going to be pretty tough, you know, pretty capable. And in fact, that was the first time I tried this. You know, I shuffled the character deck, drew the bodyguard, and he was a bodyguard for a nightclub owner. So I figured, you know, he was pretty tough. He'd be able to defend himself pretty well. Turns out, the very first round I played, he went outside of his apartment. There was, I think, some fog. And then there was like some ooze, some tar-like ooze. And then the next, and that was a threat card, I think, if I recall correctly. And then the next card was this group of people who I had raising out of the tar ooze, and totally killing him, because that's how the draw went. And I didn't have my character chicken out soon enough, you know. I thought, ah, he'll be able to take threats. Well, not how this one played out. Now, my second time, the second protagonist I drew was a correspondent, a news correspondent, and she had this penchant for sort of pushing her luck. And so I had her traveling around the city, and she ran into this forbidden tome, this book, and she picked it up, and then people were following her, and she thought they were following her because she had this forbidden book. And at one point, this isn't really a short game, like, especially if you're really enjoying it, like, you draw the story out, you know, because it's up to you. You're writing the story in your head as you play these cards. So with this, the second character that I was playing, I had to play it across two evenings because it just went on too long. And I'm not exaggerating a bit when I say that I literally lost sleep that night over the anticipation of what was going to happen to this protagonist. Like, it's that good. It's that atmospheric if you let it be. And so to that end, I want to give you a couple of tips that I've kind of discovered for myself. So depending on who you're playing with, it might help to impose a loosely judged minimum limit of sentences for each story card. With myself, I was finding, before I figured out, you know, this trick, I was finding I would put the card down and it would just be like, okay, broken down cathedral or a crumbling cathedral. Okay, my character goes in and is walking and comes across a crumbling cathedral. Okay, next card. You know, and it just be it's like, no, that's not gonna build a story. Like if I just take whatever the card says and make it into a complete sentence, that's not a story that does not make. So, it's probably better to end on the card instead of opening with the card, you know? So if you play a card and it's a log cabin, then instead of saying the character approaches a log cabin, say the character goes, you know, decides to walk through the woods along the side of the town. He turns and starts down the path. Some of the branches are knocking eerily above him in the wind. He continues through the moonlight and sees off in the distance what he thinks are glowing lights and maybe some smoke. A campfire? He continues through the path until he reaches a log cabin. It seems someone's inside. He knocks. And that already took, like, you know, three or four sentences instead of like one sentence. So, in other words, make each card a punctuation mark rather than the opener. Force yourself to do that. And then secondly, impose a limit. You know, like if you've said one sentence, then you can't draw another turn yet. You have to, or you can't draw another card yet. You have to do at least three, or you know, at least five sentences, or whatever you want to make it. And that kind of forces you to be a little bit more imaginative, because on the surface, like the story prompt is obvious. It's like log cabin. Okay, your character's going to be in a log cabin. Like that's it. Well, no, you have to get the character there first. So, you know, it forces you to be a little bit more verbose. So do that. Do those two things. Impose a sentence minimum on yourself, and I find it helpful to end on the card rather than open on the card. And that also helps you actually in your construction of the story, because it's easier to lead up to something if you know where you're going, rather than like if you just open up, oh, they get to a log cabin. Well, then what do you do from there? Like what happens then? Like, okay, they're at a log cabin, then what? Well, you don't know. You have to, now you're panicking. You're like, oh my gosh, I have no clue. I don't know. Is the cabin inhabited or is it empty? I'm not sure. You know, well, if you know where you're going, you know that the character's going to a log cabin. Now your brain has to think of all the details up to that log cabin, and you start inventing new stuff. So, in conclusion, Dark Cults, it's a really fun game. It has been re-implemented by yours truly, NotClaTwo, on gitlab.com/notclaTwo/darkoccult, OCCULT, Dark Occult. It is print and play. You can print these things out. I just went to the local New Zealand version of Staples, which is called Warehouse Stationery. Got a big pack of cardstock, threw that in a printer, printed them out, cut the cards out. I wasn't even too worried about being even. In terms of the cut, you know, like they're more or less the same size, but I wasn't scientific about it. I printed a sort of a crosshatch pattern on the back just so you couldn't see through the cards, but it's, you know, it doesn't have to be complex. Just print them, cut them out, and then start playing. It's a lot of fun. If you enjoy RPG, you want a little bit of a less structured outlet than a proper RPG, because maybe you can't get an RPG group together, maybe you just want something light and quick, although this doesn't really end up being quick, but you know, it's less to coordinate than a proper RPG game. Then this really might be ideal for you. It's a lot of fun. Dark Occult, print it, play it, and have a good time. And in fact, actually print and play it at night and play it by candlelight. That's really atmospheric. Yeah, lots of fun. Dark Occult.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HBR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hekka Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club and is part of the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike 3.0 license.